content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Anna Dean Silver from the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Out in the Garden. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the book Month by Month Gardening in the Carolinas by Bob Polomsky. And last time, we left off in the May and problem solving on lawns. And I will begin again at lawns. We just read one paragraph, so I will repeat that one and then continue on. In the coastal plains, look for tunneling and burrowing activity of mole crickets. Mark these areas for treatment with an insecticide in late June or July. Southern cinch bugs are notorious pests of St. Augustine grass that may also attack Bermuda grass, centipede grass, and zoysia grass, but cause them less harm. Damage is mainly caused by the nymphs, which suck sap and inject a toxin that causes the leaves to turn yellow and die. As they feed, the dead areas slowly enlarge. Cinch bugs' damage is usually greatest during hot, dry weather and in sunny areas rather than in shade. High levels of nitrogen and thick thatch layers predispose turf grass to cinch bug attacks. Because cinch bugs' damage can be easily confused with drought, it's best to sample the patch. Brown patch can start appearing in Carolina lawns this month. Look for gray leaf spot on St. Augustine grass. Collect infected clippings and compost them. Slime molds are slimy-looking fungi that can be yellow, white, gray, red, violet, or other colors. They may be a few inches or up to several feet in diameter. You may even find them on your shrubs during warm weather, especially during or after heavy periods of rain. These fungi are not harmful to plants. They feed on bacteria, other fungi, and decayed organic matter. If you're bothered by it, hose or brush it off the lawn. Pre-emergent herbicides to control crabgrass and goosegrass eventually lose their effectiveness. Therefore, a repeat application will be necessary for season-long control. Refer to the label to see when it has to be reapplied to control germinating weeds this summer. Identify weeds after they emerge to select an appropriate post-emergent herbicide labeled for your lawn. Grassy summer annuals to watch out for include crabgrass, goosegrass, and sandbur. Daliscgrass and bahia grass are perennial grasses that may be present. Centipede grass decline usually occurs in spring when parts of the lawn fail to come out of dormancy or start to green up, then die in late spring and summer. Several factors cause centipede grass decline: high soil pH, high amounts of nitrogen and phosphorus applied the previous year, and heavy thatch buildup nematodes, and diseases. And for perennials and oriental grasses, aphids, spider mites, and white flies can be a problem. Spider mites are especially fond of chrysanthemums, coneflowers, daylilies, and phlox. Avoid leaf spot diseases by watering your perennials from below and limiting water on the leaves. Proper spacing with plenty of air movement will reduce fungal infections. For roses, be on the lookout for damage caused by rose aphids, spider mites, and flower thrips. Take necessary action if their feeding is more than you or your roses will tolerate. Leaves attacked by black spot and powdery mildew should be picked up and discarded. To improve the effectiveness of fungicide sprays, practice good sanitation. Clean up any fallen leaves and faded blooms, prune out dead, damaged, and diseased canes, and replace mulch each spring. And for shrubs, be on the lookout for damage caused by aphids and spider mites. Blast these critters off with a strong spray of water from the hose. Get underneath the leaves to dislodge spider mites. Boxwood leaf miner is the most serious pest of boxwoods, with heaviest infestations occurring on common box, little leaf boxwood, and Harlan boxwood. The larvae feed inside the leaves, resulting in splotchy, yellow, puckered, or blistered areas on the undersides of the leaves. Heavily infested leaves often drop prematurely. Severe attacks can weaken the plant, resulting in twig dieback and exposing the plant to diseases and winter kill in colder regions. Apply a systemic insecticide to kill the young larva inside the leaves. Alternatively, replace your susceptible boxwood hedge with common box cultivars such as Safruticosa and Argenta variegata that escape serious attacks, or the Japanese boxwood cultivars Morris Midget and Morris Dwarf. Watch for Japanese beetles in the eastern Carolinas. During long, wet springs, azaleas and camellias may be attacked by the leaf gall fungus, which causes the new leaves to become thick and fleshy. Fire blight is a bacterial disease that attacks a Contonaster, flowering quince, and Pyracantha. The new shoots suddenly wilt, turn brown, turn black, and die. Prune out the diseased branches several inches below the infestation. Grow fire blight resistant Pyracantha cultivars such as Apache, Fiery Cascade, Mojave, Navajo, Pueblo, Rutgers, Shawnee, and Teton. And for trees, aphids are soft-bodied insects often found clustered at the ends of tender new growth. They suck plant sap with their piercing, sucking mouthparts, causing the leaves to curl and become malformed. Aphids have many natural predators, including ladybird beetles, lacewings, and syrphid fly larvae. Crepe myrtle aphids can be controlled with summer horticultural oil, insecticidal soap, and other insecticides. Specialized equipment may be required to treat large crepe myrtles. The Fari hybrids between the Chinese and the Japanese, have moderate resistance to aphids. A few of these hybrids are Acoma, Biloxi, Caddo, Choctaw, Natchez, Muskogee, and Tuscarora. The adult dogwood borer is a clear wing moth that resembles a slender bee. The moth is attracted to weakened stress trees where it lays eggs on the wounds, cankers, or pruning cuts. When the eggs hatch, the caterpillars bore into the bark and begin tunneling. Dogwoods can be protected from attack with a pesticide application in late spring or early summer. As with all borers, timing is very important. The insecticide must be in the tree, systemic, or on the bark to intercept the newly hatched larva before they burrow into the tree. Only wounded and cankered areas on the bark should be treated. There's no need to spray the healthy portions of the tree. Watch for bagworms on Arborvita, blue spruce, juniper, hemlock, and Leland cypress. Bagworms also feed on many broadleaf shrubs and trees, including rose, sycamore, maple, elm, and black locust. Look for powdery mildew on flowering dogwoods. A white powdery growth on infected leaves that may cause them to drop. Most powdery mildews of landscape trees occur in late summer and do not pose any harm because they will be shedding their leaves shortly. Dogwoods, however, become infected in early summer. Fungicides can control this disease. Powdery mildew-resistant dogwoods include the Coosa dogwood cultivars Big Apple and China Girl, Gay Head, Greensleeves, Julian, Milky Way Select, and Temple Jewel. The stellar hybrids, Rutfan, Rutgan, and Rutdan, are also resistant to powdery mildew. And our next one is vines and ground covers. Poison ivy is dangerous year-round. Expect irritation from the leaves, roots, berries, and even smoke when burning the vines. Learn to identify this deciduous vine with compound leaves comprised of three leaflets, hairy aerial roots along its stem, and clusters of white waxy fruit in late summer. Don't confuse it with Virginia creeper, which has five leaflets and climbs all tendrils with adhesive discs at its tips. If you think you contacted poison ivy, Wash immediately with soap and water and remove any clothes that may have the oil on them. Aphids, Japanese beetles, and spider mites can be a problem. Look for spider mites or on junipers, Passisandra, and other ground covers. Watch for snails and slugs on your ground covers. Several fungi cause leaf spots on English, Algerian, and other ivies. A bacterial disease called bacterial spot and canker is more serious because it attacks the leaves and produces cankers, discolored areas of dead tissue on the stems, which result in dieback. Clip off infected leaves. Prune out and discard dead or dying plants. Identify the particular disease before seeking control with a fungicide. Leaf and stem blight is a serious pest of Passisandra. Brown blotches appear on the leaves and spread to the stems. Remove and discard infected plants. To avoid this blight, rake up and compost any leaves in the fall. Fallen leaves create moist conditions that favor the growth and spread of disease. Scale insects are often associated with leaf and stem blight. Control them with a horticultural oil or other insecticide. Large flowered clematis are highly susceptible to clematis wilt, often when plants are on the verge of flowering. Although wilted leaves and stems that droop and turn black are the first signs, the fungus initially attacks the stem close to the soil line, invading cracked, damaged, or weak tissue. Fortunately, clematis wilt is rarely fatal. Even when all top growth is killed, new healthy shoots can emerge from basal buds below the soil surface. This is the reason for the recommendation that clematis be planted with the crown at a depth of 2.5 inches below soil level. Prune back infected stems to healthy tissue and discard the trimmings. Fertilize and water to encourage regrowth. Smaller flowered clematis such as C. alfina, C. macropetala, C. viticula, and their hybrids are less susceptible to clematis wilt. Juniper tip blight, caused by a fungus called photophotomosis, attacks the tips of shore and creeping junipers and others in the spring. The dead branches gradually turn gray. Tiny black dots on recently killed needles are the fruiting bodies of the fungus. Prune out infected plant parts and discard them, because this fungus survives in dead and decaying plant material. And the last one is water gardens. Trim off any diseased leaves from your water lilies and marginal plants and discard them. And we've come to the end of May, and we're going to start June. First, and we'll just have this part where he gives us an intro. And for some, summer is the season for vacations. Fine. But that doesn't mean that your landscape has to go on vacation too. Extend the springtime pageantry of colors, flowers, and fragrances throughout the summer with bulbs. Some bulbs require a little attention, while others thrive on neglect. Here are a few of my favorite summer bulbs. Dahlias come in nearly every color but blue, on stems that range from a foot high to over 5 feet. Their head-turning flowers range from soft peony shapes to spiky cactus shapes. Competitive gardens should grow the mammoth dinner plate, dahlias with 6 to 9 inch wide flowers, such as Thomas Edison, which is purple, Kelvin Floodlight, which is golden yellow, or Garden Wonder, which is red. For looks and fragrance, I turn to lilies with flowers that come in several colors: red, yellow, orange, pink, lavender, cream, white, and purple. For starters, I recommend Asiatic lilies. Easter lilies, you planted your potted Easter lily outside, didn't you? And the late summer to early fall flowering Formosa lilies that bear fragrant white funnel-shaped flowers in a candelabra-like display. Pineapple lilies, particularly sparkling burgundy, with its intense reddish-purple leaves, have been a reliable performer for me. With anticipation, I look forward to the miniature purple pineapple flower bud rising a foot or two high and watch it open gradually to reveal a spike of white flowers. Crinums, or swamp lilies, are the quintessential summer bulb for southern gardens. In the spring, bold green leaves sprout from underground bulbs. Some attain the size of grapefruits to create a fountain-like haystack of strap-like leaves. In the summer, clusters of lily-like flowers appear on 3-foot-tall stalks in colors that range from white, pink, or striped milk and wine lilies. Several common varieties include Ellen Bosanquet, Cecil Hoydesel, and C. Powellily album. The orange river lily is well suited for wet areas. It blooms in the spring and sporadically through the summer and fall. More hard-to-find cultivars worth seeking include the purple-leaved sangria and Regina's Disco Lounge. These are just a few of the many summer bulbs that will invigorate you and your landscape this summer without having to take a vacation. And we start with the topic to how to plan for in June stuff. And we start with annuals. This is a good month to visit public gardens to view the tremendous variety of annuals on display. Of special note are the All America Selections, AAS, display gardens that exhibit the most recent All America Selections winners. Visit their website for a list of AAS display gardens in the Carolinas. And bulbs, shrubs, and trees. Witness the splendor of public gardens throughout the Carolinas. And it says refer to public gardens on a later page, and I will get that, and I will read for a list of gardens and their addresses later on after we finish June. And edibles. If you've planted more than you can use, share your bounty with friends and neighbors. What about your community? Make plans to share your vegetables and herbs with your community soup kitchen or food bank. Herbs are especially welcome because they provide nutrients as well as flavor. Get the address of the nearest food pantry or soup kitchen that needs fresh produce from a church organization that helps the needy or from the social services department at your town hall. And for lawns, the best way to determine the fertilizer requirements of your lawn is by having your soil tested at least every 3 years through your local county cooperative extension service office. Plan to have your soil tested this month or next so you can be ready for fall. And for perennials and ornamental grasses. When you planned your garden, you probably chose perennials for their flowers, bloom time, and other features. But have you thought about selecting perennials for their ability to attract beneficial insects? Beneficial insect predators and parasites such as lady beetles, lace wings, syrphid flies, and tachinid flies prey on harmful insects, including aphids, caterpillars, and mites. In general, the larvae feed on insects and mites while the adults feed on nectar and pollen, either exclusively or to supplement their diet when insects or mites are in short supply. Okay, I think... All right. We've run out of time for today's episode of Out in the Garden, but I will continue with that topic on the next episode. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Anna Dean Silver, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Out in the Garden is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. And I hope you will join us next time where we will continue with this topic. Thank you.